This is Saturday Java with Jason. This is Jason Coffee Man, and welcome to another episode. This is where coffee meets great guests and great conversations. This week, we have Ryan Penley. I'm going to turn the time over to him so he could tell you what he does and what he's all about.
Yeah, man. So First of all, I'd like to say thanks. Thank you, Jason, for having me on here, brother. It's a pleasure. It's an honor. And so, yeah, I'm kind of making my rounds, talking about my book. I just became an author, but before I became an author, I solved some tough problems for myself with addiction recovery, substance abuse, and I think it's our responsibility. You know, anybody that finds success doing something, or solving a tough problem, or finding success in certain places, it's like I felt like it was my responsibility to kind of to reach out to, you know, to whoever might be dealing with similar circumstances. I think it's like what we should do, right? So that's my attempt with the book. It's not the silver bullet or solution for everyone, but it may help a handful of people. So that's what I'm out here talking about, man. I'm talking about, you know, trying to help some people that might need a hand, you know.
Now, when you're talking about substance abuse, it didn't just happen overnight. That must have been something that kind of grew on you, where you had either one beer, two beers a night, and it grew on you. For people out there that are not, you know, don't know, substance abuse doesn't just happen overnight. It's a gradual period, and it grows on you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you nailed it, right? It's almost, it sneaks up on you, and then the next thing you know, it's been years, and you're kind of like, man, I kind of don't remember a whole lot. But, you know, but I think it started for me as, you know, I was a young man, I was a teenager, below the legal drinking age. And I think, you know, I'm at a party, I had a couple of beers, all of a sudden I had enough confidence to talk to girls, right? And I'm like, man, this is awesome. You know, I had a couple of beers, and now I'm telling jokes, I'm walking up, I'm saying hi. And that feeling, the loss of inhibitions, I think is like what started the whole thing, right? And so from that point, you know, I kind of took it to an extreme. I ended up living in Las Vegas. So if you want to talk about the ground zero for all parties in the world, I ended up there, right? I'm in the belly of the beast. And so I took it from having a couple beers at a party to being in the middle of the world's party, if you will. And so it definitely, it progressed on me pretty quick and without real big warning, right? So
it's the city that never sleeps, but and sometimes that could be a good thing. But in your case, it's a party, you know, it's a party that never sleeps. You're partying from sunup to sundown, you know, night dark. So, you know, I mean, you're partying day in, day out, you know, and that must have really got to you too, because, you know, you're doing it every day.
Well, you know, Jason, like you had mentioned, it didn't happen instantaneous. I mean, I was there 11 years, right? So like Vegas, that's a long time. You know, some people last a couple hours and it's like, you're broke and you got to get out of here, man. Or, you know, so 11 years. It didn't start, just like you mentioned, it didn't start off like, oh, I just went out and got so blasted that I couldn't walk or talk. You know what I mean? I mean, it was at first quite enjoyable. I was still a lot of stuff outdoors. I was in school. I was paying my bills. I had a decent life. I had a good social life, and then it just kind of, it snowballed. And then, like, you know, it turned into a nightly thing. And then I started getting in trouble with the law, and then my body started kind of giving way. Right. So when you're young and you drink, you know, too much, it's like, you wake up and you feel fine, 'cause you're young, you're resilient, you know, but you do that and you start doing it like further on into life, it starts weighing on you, starts taking a toll. And that's, you know, that's what started happening. You know, my body started handling it a lot less favorably, if you will. And, you know, so things started getting messy, you know.
Right. And that's one thing. When you're young, you're like, oh, geez, I can get right back up from this one. But then you start hitting your 30s, 35, 40. And then you're like, oh, it doesn't feel the same either.
Yeah. It feels more like a truck, hit you rather than, you know, you just had a few beers at the bar. And it's like, oh man, I feel like what happened? Did I get into like a full-on fight? Was I robbed? And it's like, oh no, that's the hangover, you know? And it got worse than that for me. I had developed diabetes, right? And so I wasn't, people will say like, oh, you know, were you obese or how did you get diabetes? I guess, you know, I had taken so many prescription drugs and drank so much alcohol that I had damaged my pancreas, and that is irreversible. I still have diabetes to this day, and it was a result of those actions at that time, you know. So it got pretty gnarly, man. You know, and when we talk about rock bottom, it's like those signs were there. You know, I got fired. You know, I things had turned for the worse, and it seemed like everybody knew it but me, right? So yeah, that it got nastier and nastier, and it wasn't sinking into my mind, you know. And then I eventually got out of Las Vegas. I heeded enough advice from people that cared about me that I had to get out of there. But you know, you'll hear a lot, like people, you know, they say like, well, you know, you can change cities, you can change towns, but you bring you with you, right? So I still
No
had
matter
a lot of things.
how far you run, no matter how far you try to hide, there you are.
Exactly, right? And I thought, like, I thought it would be a progression. I thought it was a step in the right direction, but I wasn't there yet mentally, you know. So I carried that same behavior with myself up to Colorado, and the drugs got a little worse up there, and I ended up putting myself into a diabetic coma up there. And so some would say that I had died, you know. People were saying, you know, but my body temperature went to 85 degrees. You know, it'd be hard pressed to say that I was alive, right? So they had to airlift me out in a helicopter to get to another city to where they could save me. So yeah, rock bottom was starting to become undeniable, right? It was kind of like, all right, this is legitimately awful.
Do you believe you are kind of looking for, in that time, instead of just rock bottom? I know people have always said, you know, I didn't did just hit rock bottom. I was in the basement of the rock bottom, where
Yeah.
people like that who leave another state or leave another city, they kind of go harder to make up for the move they just did.
And you know what, Jason, I think you nailed it, man. I think that's pretty accurate, because I didn't get better. In fact, I mean, man, you really nailed it. That's exactly what I did. I went up there, and so now I was in a different environment, and I started using different drugs, but the behavior became much more dire. It became much more intense. And I understand like why somebody would think like, okay, well, this is my problem. I'm around these people, they do this, they do that. I just found other people that were doing other drugs. That's all I did. And I mean, if you're really on a mission, you're gonna get it. You're gonna find it. And I mean, hell, I was in a city 6,000 people. It was a tiny town. I still managed to find drugs everywhere. It was like, when there's a will, there's a way. And my will at that time was to consume drugs and to, you know, become willfully blind or numb, if you will. You know, I was on a mission. You're right. You know, and people saying, oh, I want to make sure I was in the basement. Yeah, it seems as if I was on a true mission to make sure there was no more down left, right? You know, it's like I was out on the foundation, if you will.
And, you know, I don't want to bring politics into this, but, you know, the politicians always say, oh, there's a war on drugs and this and that. I don't believe that. I think that's just a way to get more tax money. Because when there's drug users out there, drug users, abusers, pushers, whatever you want to say, they're going to find that drug no matter what. Whether politicians or anybody like that says, oh, we're going to fight that drug, there's always people out there that know how to use and abuse a system.
Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, man. And that's why, in all of my experience of being in and out of different programs and learning what I had learned by experience and also by, you know, observation, is that, and I think that the politicians, or at least the government, is catching on. Like, we've got to treat this thing early with families early on in life and children's education and things of that nature. You got to like kind of get ahead of it, right? Because if they're suffering the trauma, they will find that substance, you know? So it's like, okay, you know, they're not getting much attention early in life. And then these children are being splintered off into these tough circumstances. And then they're like, well, this sucks. So I want to either, I mean, it doesn't take much money. You can get high or you can numb your brain, huffing markers. If you want to get it done, you can get it done. So the whole point, I think, is the best solution is to kind of catch people before they want to become numb, right? So like that would be an ideal scenario. I know that's a tough call, right? Or a tough chore, a tough task, but I think that ultimately is a better move, you know, instead of creating a war on the drugs, because it doesn't matter. If I'm an addict and you take away my crack, I'm just gonna like find something else. I want to figure it out, you know. I'm gonna start huffing gasoline, whatever I gotta do, right, to catch the same effect or another effect.
Now, one thing that people don't realize too, people say there's, you know, there's drug addicts out there. They're a drug addict, not because they want to be. If they did it once and they got a really high, almost where you could say they're touching the, you know, touching the moon, touching the stars, then they crash and they say, wow, my life is all problems. When I was high, I didn't have those problems. So they go get high again, and they crash again. So it's not really that they're getting high because they want to. They're getting high, I believe, to either escape what they're going through now or to escape something, and they're looking for something. And it's that aspect of, I need to find this again, no matter what it takes for me to get there. I need that high again, no matter what.
Right. Well, they call that chasing the dragon. That's what that is, right? Like, and so, but essentially, that process you're touching on here, is that initially you get super high and you forget all your problems and you don't suffer much of the consequences, because let's face it, if somebody were to do heroin one time a year, they'd be perfectly fine. You know, obviously they didn't do too much at the one time, but like it wouldn't do enough to harm them. But what's the problem with heroin? They're going to want to do it again. And then they do it too much. And then they forego everything in their life for that high. And then the real kick in the butt, right, is that it doesn't even get you high anymore. And at a certain point, it's only getting you to normal. And that's really sad. It's like, okay, but you have a great point. It's like the first time is like, man, you know, had a rough day. You know, people do this when they've had a rough day and they do whatever it is. They take some pills and they're like, oh my gosh, I don't feel any stress. I feel kind of relaxed, you know, or I feel a little bit better. And so that first time is like, yeah, this seems like a solution. It's a nearsighted solution. It foregoes the long-term effects of what may come if they keep that returning into a habit. But like, yes, the first time is like, man, you know, here's my solution. And I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna do this again because it had worked. And that's the funny thing about drugs and alcohol. I think a lot of really, really smart people become addicted because it makes sense. If you have a rough day, and you take a bunch of narcotic painkillers, you're not going to care that you had a rough day. And it's relatively cheap and it's relatively fast. And then you're like, oh, man, what a great solution. But now if you were to just only think in the moment, which is most what most addicts do, they only think of the reward and the very short future, right? And so if you were to carry that into the future, you'd realize that problems are still there. And the relief is only temporary, and the relief is not connected to any real progress towards getting better at all. So it's like, you know, but for the time being, it makes total sense. That's why smart people, you know, they're able to become addicted, because it just works. But it only worked for that day, or it might work for, you know, a few hours. And so people just aren't, it's not as if they don't know the consequences. They're just not thinking about them in the long term when they're doing it, right? So it's a tricky thing, man.
And not just that, but depending on who you get it from, one dose could put you under because they could lace that sucker. So you think that, oh, I'm just going to do this one. That one could be one and done. Like you now have to watch your family kind of put you under. And that's the problem is you don't know who you're really buying from or what they're putting in it or what they're doing to it themselves. And plus, Ryan, your body is different than mine. You can handle something totally different. So you can do something. I could do the same amount and it can kill me, but really have no effect on you.
And I think, you know, like the recent thing, of course, the hot topic is the fentanyl, man. You know, I'm not quite sure how it's getting into everything and how it's like, oh, but it's exactly what you're mentioning. It's like, I've never done that. I think it's kind of newer than when I was in that scene. It just wasn't around, but it's now like it's creeping into all kinds of different street drugs. And you're right, man. You're right. 100% right. Somebody that doesn't know it's there, or maybe they do know it's there, but boom, we're talking death, like almost instantaneous. And it's like, it's a very scary thing, man, because you're right. You don't know what's coming. You don't know what you're actually, you know, let's face it, you know, street drugs aren't FDA approved, right? It's ugly.
Right. And I mean, I want to touch on one thing. You said you're an upcoming father. So there's people out there that say, oh, geez, I'm an upcoming father. I can't handle that. Or, oh, geez, I got fired and I can't handle that. There's a lot of people that use excuses and they try to run, but they run and, you know, things catch up with you. So running isn't always the best thing. Sometimes it's better to deal with what you're going through now, not try to run, not try to hide, because when you come down, that's still going to be there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the people that are, I think people that either run or they don't embrace courage and they choose cowardice, like, man, you know, and I understand courage is not always easy. And in fact, I think most times it's quite hard. It's quite difficult, but it's our, if you don't choose courage, what you're actually doing is you're making everything worse, man. And the more times you choose cowardice, the more times you run. Now I know this is a tough message to relay to somebody that's in the trenches, you know, and people deal with some serious problems out there. So I get it. And I'm not trying to say I understand everybody's problems. You know, you had mentioned me becoming a father. At this point in my life, I can handle it. But if we were talking to me 6 years ago, that person would want to run. And so, you know, courage is like a muscle you can develop. You know, you can work on it. It's something, if you choose enough, you become more resilient. So, you know, we get that choice, and that's a beautiful thing, right? You can choose courage. It may not always be the easiest choice, but it, you know, forget what I just said. It's actually, I would say it's the easier choice, maybe not in the short term, but in the long term, it is the easier choice. Because if you choose cowardice and you run, your problem is there. It doesn't go away. So, and then the more times you try to ignore it, the worse it usually gets. So, you know, yes, at the present moment, the courageousness is difficult to choose. But if you go the other way, you run and you ignore your problems, I can promise you your life will become harder and quick.
Now, I know you've been wanted, and I'm not talking in love. I'm talking in reality sense, where you said off the air you were wanted in three states. So you talk about running. Ryan knows what it's like to turn behind, you know, always looking over your shoulder, knowing that I'm running. But he's not running from issues. He's literally running from the authorities.
Yeah, man. It's a perfect example. I mean, that was a great segue, because I could have stood up and faced the reality that I made some seriously bad choices when it came to the law. And instead, I took off, man. I took off, and I thought, you know, I think I knew in the back of my mind, I'm like, man, you know, I'm going to have to pay for this one day. But I just kept going. I kept running. I might get into a circumstance where, like, before, I was wanted in Nevada, I was wanted in Las Vegas, and I went to Colorado. And I knew I just turned my back on everything there, went to Colorado, and I ended up getting pulled over. And of course, they were like, hey, man, you know, because I was polite, and I was like, oh, hey. And they're like, you know, there's a problem here. It says you have a warrant out for your arrest. I played dumb. I'm like, oh, are you serious? That's crazy, man. He's like, yeah, I think, you know, you're gonna wanna get that taken care of. I'm gonna give you a notice to appear. So here I am. I'm faced with the challenge to be courageous, go to court, and face the music. What did I do? I ran. I never showed up, and I came back to Florida. And I'm in Florida, and my drug abuse and alcoholism got a hold of me. Me and my mother, God bless her, she's still struggling with drugs and alcohol. However, the situation with her and I led me right into another jail cell, and then I got out. So, and then I had another court date, didn't go to that. So here I am, wanted in Florida, wanted in Nevada, and I'm wanted in Colorado. And then eventually, man, I after I gained some sobriety, I also, once I started choosing courage to face my addiction, I started developing that skill set, that muscle of courageousness. I started choosing courage over and over again, and it made me stronger. And then at a certain point, I said, yeah, I gotta do this. And I went to Nevada. I turned myself in Colorado. Forgive me, I forget which one I did first. I think either way, I went to Colorado, turned myself in, and then I went to Nevada. And I got together enough cash to go pay my fines and stand up there in court and say, hey, here's the deal. And this had been years. We're talking like 8 years. 8 years. I go back to court, and they're like, wow, this is a pretty old case. And I'm like, well, I'm here, you know. I'm like, well, how much money do I got to give you? They were like, you know, they told me this dollar amount. It really wasn't that much, to be honest. I'm like, man, I was running all that time. I could have handled this. And then they gave me some classes I had to take, and that was about it. But, you know, I lacked the courage to do it. So until I found that courage, and until I chose courage, you know, I stayed living in the shadows, like you said, looking over my shoulder, you know, worried if I'm going to see those red and blue lights, and knowing what's going to happen if I do, you know.
And a lot of times, facing the music is the easiest thing, but a lot of people don't do that, and they run and run, and sometimes it doesn't end up the best way when they do get stopped, because they get thrown in jail, more charges. It's easier just to come clean, because a lot of times you walk away with less charges.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the thing about it is, like you said, and I think, you know, looking back, I know it now, but my mind had made it way worse than it was, man. I mean, like I said, I showed up and I paid the fine. I'm like, oh, that wasn't that bad. I mean, it was like $800. That's a lot of money, but like, it wasn't enough to be running for years. Like, I could have figured it out, right? And so, but in my mind, I thought, oh, man. You know, I didn't know what I thought. I turned it into this dragon that I couldn't slay. I turned it into this monster I couldn't face. And so I ran, and in my mind, it lived as this like insurmountable foe, this insurmountable monster. And, you know, and then when I actually got the courage to go face it, I said, oh, this isn't so bad, you know.
Now, you mentioned your mother is on, you know, is suffering problems. Did that ever make you think, well, my mother's doing it, I'm going to follow in her footsteps because it's what I know. It's what I'm familiar with. Have you ever thought that, or is that kind of not the way you felt?
I would say that's not the way that it developed because well, so my mother didn't necessarily raise me. I was raised by my grandparents, and so my father and mother both suffered from addiction. My father, he got sober some years ago, but we didn't have a relationship because of his use in the past. And so my mom she's still active in addiction. And I could say, the questions come up a lot, like, oh, well, is it because your mother or father, like, oh, that's why. Some people just assume, like, oh, well, that's why, it's genetic. And I don't think there's any real way to quantify it. Like, I don't know, there's no real way to measure, if that was the true reason. Or and to be honest, like, I've abandoned trying to, like, solve that problem. It's like, man, if I just spend all my time working on solving whether or not it was them or not, or me, it just seems to be, like, more useful to work forward and on myself. So, but the question is, your question is like, what did her use and abuse have to do with me? Now, I'll say this, in the environment that I grew up in, it was, I had seen drugs, and I knew they were around, and I definitely knew what alcohol was. I was very clear on that. And it wasn't glorified, but it was around. So, when I think back on that, it's a really tough question. I know that now my perception of, like, my mom, I think about it, like, what would I do if she called me right now and said, hey, I need help, and I made a lot of mistakes, but no more. I want to move in the right direction. Now, that's a pretty far off reality. I wish it wasn't, but it's become like most addicts, and sometimes you've got to distance yourself from them. So that's where I'm at now with her. I've had to make it to, I've had to totally just end the relationship because I've got too much risk. As I told you, I'm expecting a baby here soon. And, I wish circumstances were different, but I can't afford to have people like that in my life. And that's sad because I would do, if she asked me today, like, hey, I need help, I would help her. And like I said, that wouldn't be a tough choice. But the other tough choice that I have to make is not having her around until that call is made, right? Like, that's got to be my reality. And so, it comes down to boundaries,
I understand that totally. And, that is your mother. So, of course, if she calls, you're going to want to, get a relationship. But, right now, yes, I understand what you're going through because she could be also an enabler to kind of be. I know that, you can't say you're a past drug addict because you're always going to be fighting that demon. You're always going to want what you had. So I understand that you would not want that because it, bad influence on your offspring and a bad influence on yourself too.
And it boils down to, just like you mentioned, man. Like, I can't, if I could somehow be certain that she was on the right path to being better, then that might be a different conversation to have her around my family. But without, like, some assurances, like, they ain't happening, man. I'm not trying to have that, the volatility, man. And you know what? People had to do that with me. People had to do that with me. Good friends. And I'm gonna promise you, I'm not upset with them. I get it, man. I was a total jerk. I would, if you invited me to your house or your birthday, you would have to think, oh man, he might come in here and just ruin this whole day, And it was true. And, like, looking back, I get it, man. I get it. I've told people, I'm like, hey, I understand. You had to keep me away because having me around was too risky. So boundaries, you know what I'm saying? It's sometimes tough to do.
Okay, Ryan, what was your first job?
All right. Well, my first, like, legally paid job, I was a busboy at Carrera's Cucina Italiana. That was my first paid job.
What is your favorite season?
Spring.
What is your favorite food?
Ice cream. And I'm diabetic, and I shouldn't say that, but I mean, yeah, I don't do drugs and alcohol, but I do ice cream, and I do ice cream too much. Full transparency.
Who is your hero?
Dead or alive.
Straight up.
Just any. Okay, Marcus Aurelius, the philosopher king, and also kind of like the founder of like Stoicism philosophy, all in Jesus. That's tough, man. I could go for days. So I'll just stop there. Oh
What is your favorite dessert?
it's ice cream. But I mean, you want to get like specific? You know, say cookies and cream, Oreo bars, Oreo bars.
What time do you wake up?
It's almost embarrassing, like 3:30, 4 in the morning. No alarm.
What movie do you quote the most?
Yeah. Snatch by Guy Ritchie.
Are you a night in or a night out?
Night in. Night in.
Are you a thinker or are you a doer?
Doer.
Do you learn by watching or do you learn by doing?
Doing and failing.
When you go swimming, do you tiptoe in or do you dive in?
Dive in, man. Get it going.
What's your guilty pleasure?
Goes back to the ice cream. It's embarrassing. I know. I understand. I got high blood sugar, and there I go. I'll do it. I'll do it tonight. I promise.
What motivates you?
Progress.
What is your deepest fear?
Stagnation. Oh, not being valuable, or stagnate. Well, I mean, they're not necessarily the same thing, but when you're an addict, man, you're useless. And I know what that feels like. And man, that sucks.
How do you want to be remembered?
I think the superhero for my children. And I know I'm only starting with one next week, but yeah, I plan on having more.
On your gravestone, what's something you would have written for people that don't know you, Ryan, to be like, oh, that was definitely him?
Stage presence.
And what do you care the most about?
God, my new wife, and my soon-to-be born son, and my family has become my newest adventure.
Now, I talked to a few people out there too that have addiction problems. And one organization that always is brought up is AA. And they're not just alcoholics. They're for drugs, they're for everything. So I want you to kind of give your thoughts on AA.
Yeah, so historically, there's no organization that has done more for sobriety than AA. They've got an outstanding framework, the 12 steps. I mean, there's no lack of evidence that a lot of people have resonated with what they do. And now there's different splinters of AA, of course. Well, I mean, other than like NA, and but I mean, the 12 steps have been kind of, altered to kind of reach different areas of people that want to participate, but maybe they don't believe in God, or they want to do without the religion thing, and so they use different words for the framework. Personally, I didn't do well with it. It wasn't that I didn't do well. I didn't give it enough of a chance. But when I went into AA, I personally had a problem with saying, "Hi, my name's Ryan, I'm an alcoholic," because every time I said it, I was solidifying that identity, and I'm very big on your identity. So I wanted my identity to be the person that says, "Hi, I'm Ryan, I don't drink, no thank you." Right. So I wanted to be that person, just like, you know, if you're not a smoker and I say, hey, cigarette, and you just say, I'm not a smoker. Nothing. I'm not a smoker. I wanted my identity to be that. Like I didn't want it to be who I am. And so that was just me, man. It didn't really sink into me, but it's not, like I said, it's a reality that it helps has saved so many lives. And so therefore, and I am well aware that there is, I've used many of the steps. I just didn't participate in the program.
Now, I want to say this. Now that you shook off, I want to see your demons and, you got your head out of your ass and woke up. You decided to become an author and you wrote a book that I want you to speak about for a moment. It's called Man Up, Sober Up. And that kind of stuck to me. And I want to know what that book is about. And why you wrote it and who you wrote it for.
Man Up, Sober Up was, it was my attempt at maybe helping some people in some circumstances that I'm familiar with. And I kind of touched on early on in the podcast, I was saying, like, I feel like it's my duty to, if I've learned anything, and I feel like I've learned a lot, to be clear. And I did. It was an amazing process too, to write the book, to take those thoughts that I had been thinking about for so long and get them onto paper and feel and look at it, read it, and say, okay, this is useful. Like there's some really, really useful tactics, strategies, and ways, things that I use. And again, it's not going to work for everyone, but if it works for a handful of people, man, I consider that a success. I consider it a win. So, but it's not only strategies. The other half of the book, like, you know, each section, each step of the book is like, it starts with a story of my journeys and my experiences of rock bottom. And these are objectively rock bottom moments in my life. And people, it'd be hard pressed to say that they're not rock bottom moments. So I use those to kind of share some of, you know, maybe somebody resonates with those periods in my life, homelessness, and, you know, all these things, like my body shutting down. Like it's to kind of communicate, I understand, I did get myself into tough situations, and then also expressions on how I got out of it. You know, I don't want to leave people with like, oh, that sucks. It's like, oh, that sucks. Oh, and this is how he, you know, got out of that scenario, right? So that's what the book is all about. You know, it's my attempt at trying to lend a hand to people that are out there in the struggle, in the trenches of either drug addiction or alcohol abuse, you know, either one. And so, yeah, that's my shot at sharing what I have, and I think it's done well so far. I did reach the number one spot in sales. It was the number one selling book in alcoholism, not for long, but, you know, I was up there for a minute. And so, to me, I'm incredibly proud about it, and I encourage everybody to write a book. You know, I think, Jason, I think you need to write a book. You know, I think I can see the stories wanting to pour out of you, brother, and I think it's a cool experience, and I'm glad I did it, and I'm glad people are reading it. You know.
If I can correct one thing on you keep saying people and persons and all this, but you know what? Even if you only help one person, then you still did a good job because that one person out there could be thanking you. You don't need to help five or six. It'd be nice to do, but even if you help that one, then
Yeah.
should be thankful for that. You don't, it's great to help five or six, but even if you just help one,
Yeah.
then that one
Well,
person,
Jason, I'll tell you this, man. This is going to sound super selfish, but, you know, I already did help one person when I wrote it, and that was me. And by helping myself, you know, I'm in a better position for my family and for others. And it got me on here with you, my friend. And so, you know, hey, you know, but you, I get your point, and you're right, man. So, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm super pumped, man. I'm super pumped about it, and yeah, I feel good about it, brother. You know.
And the only person that can create real happiness is yourself. So I want to say to Ryan, you know, good job. If I was there, I'd give you a pat on your back because, I mean, you did it, man.
Thanks, brother. That means a lot, man. Thank you.
Well, Ryan, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you? Are you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, any of that?
Yeah, on Facebook, I have a page. It's My Rock Bottom Recovery. It's a pretty solid community there. But if you want to get a hold of me directly, go to ryanpenley.org. You know, I got some links to buy my book, and there's also an author contact page. And so if you fill that page out and shoot me an email, like I will get back to you. So, you know, I've been encouraging people to reach out that way. And so, yeah, those are two good ways, ryanpenley.org and then also Facebook, My Rock Bottom Recovery.
And the books are available on Kindle, Amazon, and also hardcover and softcover.
Yeah. Just to get on Amazon, the links are there, or on my site too, right? The links are there. You click that bad boy, it'll bring you right to it.
Okay. Again, this has been Ryan Penley, and I would like to thank him. And again, this has been Saturday Java with Jason, and I am Jason Coffee Man.